don't mind that balance. I think I'm sitting about right for what you get.
Listen up, Umi. This is a podcast with the most ducker. This is Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Bale of Battle Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined tonight by Tanya Gates.
Hi, everybody.
Adam Camilleri.
Hello, evening.
And Red Powell.
Hello.
How's everybody doing this afternoon, evening, morning, future world?
Future. Yeah, future.
Woo!
It's all right. It's all right, future. All right. Wake up happy.
It's nice to know it's bright out there. It's good. Good things coming up. Last week, we talked about some very interesting topics around gotcha moments and stuff. Get some great comments and discussions about that. So this is your first time checking us out. We do a weekly show. You might want to go back and check out some of the, our programs from before. You might, I don't know, might find some cool things to talk about or to think about or how to approach the game. I enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was very happy. I was indulged with my topic last week. And very happy it went down so well as well.
Glad for that, at least that.
I have an exclusive thing I'd like to reveal right now. You're only going to get this here.
Oh, spicy.
Oh, crap. Okay.
Ad mech are pretty good.
Great.
Man.
Just get it out of the way now.
Yeah. break it down though. Don't leave it there. What makes them so good? If you want to put it out there,
I don't want to make the episode about that because again, I know that AdMech I think they're going to be disruptive in the same similar way that Drakari were. Is that it's going to take some getting used to, and a skilled AdMech general can really apply some layers of characteristics and buffs and stratagems in a way that are going to seem incredibly powerful. And if you get caught on the other end of that or expose too much of your army to that, then you could have some lopsided games. I think that the Manipulus is very strong. We've just got an FAQ released that says you can't double dip the Manipulus, but even if you have two Manipuluses and two units, 20-man units to buff, you're going to get some serious pain out of those things, including the various other things you can stack on there. And big fan of the relic that's the martial only relic, and we talked about it, the one that lets him reroll ones to hit and ones to wound within
just
a certain
that makes
radius.
That do so much value, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the problem scenario that AdMech will create is that they will be able to build a very effective castle, very similar to what we've seen from Tau in the past. Hmm. And so you've got to figure out ways to crack that nut, get in there, utilize terrain. Yeah, that's what you're going to be up against. And if your list is not capable of doing that, or you've picked the wrong secondaries that require you to be out in the open getting pelted with las bullets, then it's going to be a rough go. And so I think it's going to take, I think people just have to adjust and plan for it. And that's kind of the way I felt as I was rolling the dice, is that, I've got enough maneuverability to try to pick my own venues for engagement on the scope of the table. And if folks are not bringing something that makes me change my strategy, think on the fly or whatever, then it's going to be rough.
Yeah. And a lot of people have said that. A lot of interesting things we should talk about AdMech. The fact that they're in a lot of ways, they're more punishing than Drakari was, and yet they're getting way less of the heat Drakari got. And I'm assuming that's because there's still quite a bit of hobby lag going on, people trying to accumulate these models, new people, brand new to the faction, picking up this codex, having to start from scratch and needing something like, 20, 40, sometimes 80 of these infantry models. It takes time to put these things together. But, Drakari, when that model range dropped in, I think it was 4th, 5th, or 6th edition, can't even remember. I just talked about edition. Almost two decades there. There we go. The middle one of what I said. So many people jumped on that thing then. And, it's similar to Space Marines. I know a lot of people who are, Eldari curious have had 2,000 points under their bed of Drakari already that they can just pick up and take to an event the next day. And so, yeah, I think AdMech's still lagging behind. But the thing is, I think AdMech is more punishing than Drakari. I guess Drakari, I got I got it handed to me first eight or nine times before I actually made a game of it, even got close to winning. And I still felt like I had more of a game than the couple of games I've had against AdMech now.
Oh, where
it's just like any single thing my opponent can point a unit at, like if you can see a unit of mine, it's dead. Okay, it's true against AdMech, you know? Which it feels very Tau-esque, doesn't it? It feels like Tau from 6th edition, 7th edition.
It's brutal. I mean, this is very similar to Xenos shooting, which you do not often find in the Imperial side of things. But they are still squishy. They're unless you start talking about the Castellan robots. And
are we going to start talking about the Castellan robots?
What a lead in!
I love the Castellan robots are not squishy.
Doing his own segues is great.
You can. They're not as shooty as they were, but you can basically be very clumsy with them and still do okay because of just the profile of their stats. Now you pay a lot of points for them, but I'm surprised they're not in more lists. And I would expect them to be in more list because all that stuff I was talking about finding ways to push into the AdMech opponent, they pretty much put the brakes on that with a healthy squad of Castellan robots.
So let me ask you something. What I'm hearing from you, Paul, and you, Adam, is that AdMech's really strong, and even you as seasoned players are finding that it might be a struggle to go up against this faction. So, like, maybe we should be a bit proactive. Like, how could you said use terrain and I guess get like close combat units in there. So like, is there any faction that you think has any like good tools against AdMech right now? Or is there a certain strategy that might work for them?
It's tough to crack them with shooting a bit. I think you really have to get up there and mix it up with them in the melee phase, close combat phase. And it's even difficult to come in out of deep strike on them in a certain situation. So you've got to figure out a way. And Adam, I'll let you, I'm sure you've maybe encountered this with their strategy similar to Auspex scan.
Yeah, we actually did the same thing for Drakari. I mean, Paul smashed out like 40 minutes of us just running through what people can do to get some of the to close the gap between themselves and AdMech. And there are a lot of things you can do. But the thing is, the one that bothers people the most, I think, about this matchup is that the thing that's going to help you the most is the terrain. And generally speaking, if you're playing at a tournament, the terrain is outside your control. And I think that bothers people quite a bit. Like, hey, well, I can put together this amazing good game plan against AdMech and take all these different things at different tech pieces. But if I don't have the right terrain in my deployment zone, this is all for naught. I think that's the thing, the complaint I'm seeing the most, and that the fact that they need the most to activate all their counterplays needs to have a certain density or a certain type of profile of terrain. I am a big fan of taking things that can either single target remove 20 fully buffed up rangers or vanguard. People will know things like plasma receptors where they go to for a lot of ways and means for that. Previously, especially when Necrons were very potent at the start of this edition, people were looking at ways to pick up wholesale units at a time. The other way to do it, though, and this is the way that I'm leaning into, because things like plasma receptors are far easier for your opponent to maneuver around, insulate from, because they're only 18 inch range. And also, it's a bad return for investment. If you come down with six plasma receptors and pick up 20 ranges and then lose the six plasma receptors, you still lost in that exchange, because it's likely you've only got one unit of those plasma receptors, but they've got 2, 3, 4, 6 of those 20 man blocks. And so, you know, it's diminishing returns on your end. Now, where it gets spicier, where it gets interesting, where I like to look at it is ways of taking off somewhere between 6 to 10 of every one of those 20-man units at the same time, and thereby diminishing the ability to maximize all those layering buffs. So make them and cripple those units to an extent that even if they fully buff them all up to whatever they want, they're not going to ruin the game for you. You're still going to have some play. For me, that's things like Talamasters. They're very good at this job, especially in Devastator Doctrine. They can reach out from one side of the board whilst being untargetable, you know, due to bodyguard or just having things in front, and then take off a decent chunk of one of these. And there's a lot of different things in the game that do something like that, that just put out a decent density of, say, strength 6, which is the strength 6 minus 2 is what I'm seeing as a good profile. If you can zero in on those kind of things, I'm thinking even things like scat bikes, scatter lasers, shuriken cannons on bikes, or you can use some fire and fade shenanigans to keep them from getting shot. Some things Grey Knights can do, shooting from out of line of sight with the strength 5 and the strength 6 guns on the silencers and Storm Bolters, very good profiles there for getting this job done. There's a lot of different cherries here, there, and everywhere sprinkled with a lot of people's factions. Look into those things. Some of those will be maybe it's SMS, the super SMS custom sept for Tau. That'd be a great idea. So the strength 5 minus and the more cover gets around a couple of different things. So yeah, look at those little things you can start putting a decent density into your list. And the good thing about doing it this way is you don't need to have all your eggs in one basket, which is the way the plasma receptors were. If you do want to take the plasma receptors, go for it, but don't have them be your only one solution for these units. And then on top of that, get really good, get really good with your deployment phase. To crack out your table at home or your kitchen table, measure out a deployment zone, put a couple of decent pieces of terrain there, and just try and get yourself so you won't lose your key units turn one, and that can give you a decent leg up as well.
Even Terminators with Storm Bolters. So that Auspex skin I was talking about, they only get to fire it off if you land within 12 inches of the unit that's going to be firing. If you do come down, you know, even if you're trying to stay out of, you're staying off table because you don't want to be shot or the lanes of fire are not hospitable to you, when you come down, make sure you don't inadvertently trick yourself into getting into that 12 inches so they can put off one of these strategies that would reduce, you know, it lets them be able to fire in your phase. But volume of fire, storm bolters, just enough to start, like you were talking about, weakening those units to where their buffs have less of an impact, auras have less of an impact because there are fewer shots coming out.
Yeah, exactly right. I'm keen to hear what Red has got. Red seems to be the more the aggressive player amongst us, so I'm guessing he's got some more insights about how to come to grips with them in melee.
Yeah, I appreciate everything you've said, Adam. It's quite a bit. And, we mentioned in retrospect that the regard that we gave to Drukhari. I mean, you may be able to correct me, but I think we have 3 episodes specifically titled like something in regards to Drukhari. And then I'm pretty sure that we have a 4th and 5th episode where we talk a lot about Drukhari still. And so I think that there's something to it in regards of, you look at everything that's out there. And I really do think that the advancement of the Codex is, talking about, it's almost like a technological advancement that we could probably spend another, 3 official and 2 pseudo episodes just talking about how to manage Sisters and then also AdMech, just because there's so much more. And I think that something to it is that the game has really stepped up its pace. We talk about how the AdMech are playing like how old Tau used to. Well, I think the AdMech have really grown into kind of their own aspect. I think that the Codex previously, there were a lot of good things to it, but I really think that they just took what was in the Codex already and turned it up to 11. And so, and we kind of saw that with Drukhari, and I think we really saw it with Sisters and some of the new models they got. And so I think that's kind of a thing in 9th edition, personally. I really do see them trying to play to what they think, like, how it should be and how the faction should be. And it's not bad. And I don't think it's bad. And I think that as it's come by and what I said for Drukhari, the same thing with AdMech, is that I do think that there's some adapt or die concepts to this. Don't get me wrong, like, 9th edition should and has so far outbalanced 8th edition. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that just goes to show that it's not the same edition. And so when we look back at some of the other stuff, I think you're not going to see a mirror image of what we had previously. Mm. But I know that there is some really good stuff to it. And so when it comes to AdMech and what we're talking about, like, yeah, there's strengths and weaknesses, and they do have a lot of flexibility in what they can be played as. And I think that, just like Sisters, that's something I said that I thought was good strength to them. But I do think that I don't think that they're outside of the realm of being beat necessarily. And I think that, Adam, you said it, with the Drukhari, you played it this many times, and after a little while, you started to get where the nuances were. And I think part of that also goes to the player or the pilot of the list. And I think that that's a huge part that kind of gets overlooked, reaching back to one of our previous episodes talking about how to, planning how to play, but not doing it in a vacuum. Like, who are you playing against and what's their business about, and how do they typically like to play, and how are they trying to use the AdMech to accomplish that? And so looking at the robots, for example, I mean, I think Castellan robots have always been pretty formidable units. It's just a matter of, I was fortunate the one time that I was staring down 6 of them. My opponent at the time, unfortunately, didn't realize that I was going to, how exactly I was going to launch my berserkers across the field, right? Mm-hmm. And so...
Wait, was that a gotcha moment?
No, I mean, discovery learning for sure. And so there's something to that, and it really is. And I think that it's important that you understand how you're going to use stuff like that going forward, because exactly what we said, the AdMech have a lot of good stuff on paper, a lot of good abilities and skills that I could totally play on their own. it really goes into how they're being used after that. So I think that you're going to have to, you really need to know what you're looking at, because correct me if I'm wrong, and I haven't got to play AdMech extensively. I've played a couple games against them, the newer material, and not with a ton of points, but so not the most competitive game. But I mean, their command phase seems to take a while.
You can go into a routine with it. You really can, because you know you're going to know what you want to do. Like you're going to want to give Negwin AP. You're going to want to do this. You know, you're even if you need no cards, it does take a bit, especially when you are deciding which canonical and which doctrino to use. But even then, you can fall into a routine.
You can, but you got to also explain that to your opponent to a certain extent. And yeah. that's where I think something of the concern comes from.
Fair enough. We're talking about, you know, in reference to things that can stack up well against them, I think Sisters and Drukhari stack up really well. I mean, the Drukhari can charge from basically out of nowhere. Yep. They have a high volume of fire if they choose to go that route. And the same with Adeptus Sororitas. I mean, there's we've been an advocate of the Immolators, and I think Immolators stack up quite well. The Immolators are not going to stay on the table forever. But the fact that they have a decent amount of wounds, have the Immolator Flamers, and have an invulnerable save really helps them get into position to where you can maybe pick up a squad or two.
Yeah, especially when you're turning around Dominions and they get that scout move, which I'm actually seeing a lot of people, they look at things like the scout moves that people have, say, on Necrons and things like Dominions, and they look at it as a way to project threat, as in getting people's faces through those Alpha Strikes. But man, I'm starting to see them used a lot as just repositioning tools, like pull back, flow forward, tilt this way, change it from, like, turn one, you change the game from being Dawn of War deployment for both of you to you are playing Vanguard, and they're playing Dawn of War, or you're playing Hammer and Anvil, they're playing Dawn of War. And that kind of stuff has a lot of potency, and that can get you a very long way in a game, especially when you put those things out, the those things that can redeploy just out there in the wind, just on your line, and it changes how your opponent deploys, how they conceptualize their first turn, and then you change the stakes before the game actually starts. I love those things. I think they're very powerful.
Yeah, that is something that I've fallen for. Numerous times, even though... too. Of course I know what Eldrad does. Oh, how did I forget that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he did it so... Oh, I remember now. Because he had the three-unit scout move deal. It was a D3-unit scout move.
Basically a redeploy. That was his thing. And back, he even had it back when it was kind of uncommon. So he was like the only model that could do it. And of course, you knew that he did it. And then when he'd do it to you, you're like, oh, come on.
You still not know. Yeah. I remember getting de-scythed. I remember asking my opponent if he can de-scythe me with that unit turn one. And he's like, no, but kind of. I'm like, explain. And he's like, thank God I asked that question.
you asked it in the right way, too. Do you have any, if you just asked, you know, what's their movement, then you'd be like, oh, they only move 6 inches. And you're like, oh, great, I'm safe. But you asked the better question.
Exactly. Sometimes that's the difference, just asking in a different way.
If we're talking about this, I think high, cheap volume of fire, even if it's first rank, second rank firing, you know, kind of thing, these are stuff that stacks up really well against the AdMech. I mean, I'm not necessarily advocating like mech'd up guard or whatever, but I will say they're only going to have so many Iron Striders to go around, and most of the other things in the army are geared to taking out infantry or, you know, toughness 3 type stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's one of the interesting things I've started doing, especially with my marine lists, is I'm trying to not take anything that's over 200 points, like no single unit over 200 points. And therefore, I get more units in my army, and I care a lot less when I lose one. Because what I was doing was, I was playing Dark Angels, and I was having like 300, 400 point units of Terminators. Every time one of them, you know, I rolled poorly, or my opponent managed to line up the stars and get the right profiles of guns at the right time, etc. And I lost like 6 or 8 of a unit. It was huge. I was like, oh, wow, I think I might have just lost just straight up. And then there'd be a lot more work to go into the game, which is good. It was good for me as a player. I had to work harder, learn more, try. And I think that's a thing people could maybe want to adopt. Maybe these big units aren't what you want, where you want to be at the moment. Because when you have things that are as cheap as 20 Rangers with the right buffs, or 20 Vanguard with the right buffs, can just decimate them. Are they still where you want to put it? Or do you want to just have multiple, you know, decent value units rather than one big value unit?
Yeah, and it doesn't take a lot to buff them. You can basically buff them as just your normal course of business, essentially.
Yeah.
But what gets better with this type of things in the environment, in the ecosystem of the scene? Bloat drones with flesh mowers?
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree with that. In fact, I've been really surprised that the bloat drones have somewhat fallen off in many people's lists. I don't see them. I suppose a lot of people are playing Terminus Est at the moment for their go-to Death Guard builds. But yeah, I really like the idea of like core of a Death Guard army being two flesh mowers, two PBCs, two contemptors with Volkites. I think that is a core of what can be a very well rounded and competitive list. And so when I say two Volkite, I mean two Volkite contemptors. Apologies.
I think we got that.
We got it. Yeah. Anybody's been paying attention lately has got it.
So with the blow drone though, it's not a ton of points. What is it? Sub 150 something, 140 ish. Yeah. And the flesh mower, each time you make an attack, three hit rolls instead of one. So I think it's got four base attacks. So you're getting, 11 million attacks? neg two AP, damage two at strength seven.
Yes, and reroll ones to wounds. So against these toughness three models, it's hitting on threes, winning on twos, rerolling. And very, very good. A perfect profile for things like infiltrators, Rustalkers, Taraxi. That have that toughness three body, but with the two wounds, because this thing has two damage. And they have a 5-blank invuln and a neg two, even with the plus one save. What Doctrina will still take him to the 5+ invuln. So, yeah, that's a really good point.
I think it stacks up well against the Iron Striders as well. These things have a 10-inch movement plus your charge. And, you know, you're going to trade off with these things, or at least try to trade off with those things. And if you come out on the top end of it, then you're right. You're immediately right there into their lines and creating a situation with just a couple of models.
And so this is going to be a crazy thing. I've been looking at a couple of the more thing units out there. I had a time where I was looking at one of the Gladiator Reapers, because it's got those mass strength six shots. Now, it's on the Impulsor chassis. It's essentially the
super predator,
the Primaris Predator.
Yeah,
for all intents and purposes. But it's got some really interesting guns. The same thing for the Redemptor. My Redemptors have always been kitted out for pretty much all of this edition. I've been kitted out with the plasma, but I'm kind of considering chucking that Onslaught back on it now. And there's a couple of reasons for the same things we've been talking about. It's got the right profiles, especially that the Gladiator Reaper. So it's got 24, so at 30 inches, has 24 shots at strength 6 minus 1, 1 damage. Dev Doctrine, if you know an extra minus, there's a couple of ways to keep it in Dev Doctrine for numerous turns of the game, if not every turn of the game. And it's got a decent defensive profile, especially if you've got a way, you know, you've got a techie nearby to give it, you know, 3 wounds back a turn or a way through Psychic Power and whatnot to give it an invuln. You know, toughness 8 with 12 wounds. It's not easy to kill. I mean, chicken walkers will make a mess of just about anything.
Well, it does have the smoke screen keyword, right? Doesn't that allow him to
Be
in a neg one or something? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But armies like Admech just make us want to go back to the drawing board. And the things that we would have thrown out as being like, oh, I want this profile, not that profile, just take some time, reevaluate your choices. And when armies come out like Drakari, like things that polarize the game in a different direction to where it was, you know, we had things like Dark Angels and Death Guard polarizing us towards durability and needing to have, like, you know, pocket mortal wounds and really high damage stuff or ridiculous quantity low damage stuff. This is another little shift. You want to have stuff that's going to clear out these ranges and things, but also has the right profiles. This is why I talk about strength 6. Strength 6 is still a really good profile to kill things like chicken walkers. It's still winning on fours. They've still they have an invuln, so you don't want to waste and go, like, you know, to rend 3 or rend 4.
The invuln is only 6. Value. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
6 plus.
Yeah. That strength 6 gives you the duality of being, you know, wounding a lot of the best vehicles they've got, in my opinion, being those chickens on fours, and then still wounding all those toughest 3 infantry on twos.
I guess we could even kind of do the math. Is with 24 shots, I don't think you're getting through a squad of 5.
Oh, no, not at all.
Of those.
But there's very few things that will.
Everyone you kill.
Outside spamming multi-melters?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Everyone you kill is radically dropping their vehicle stopping power. So each one that you take down, and if you're if you were to have a gladiator, it's ultimately more valuable in the next turn.
And I mean, it's the same thing with those units. If you have a unit of 3 chicken walkers, killing one, you know, half killing one, another one that turn, like killing one and a half one turn, one and a half the next turn, you want to just take away their ability to min max all those great incredible buffs they've got. And so, you know, if you have one unit, if you got a unit of 5 chickens that they've got, yeah, sure, you want some like attack bikes with multi melters, eradicators, you know, retributors with multi melters. You want something to go and just slap the unit as hard as you can in one go. But if you can't do that, just kill what you can without losing too much in return.
I think that's it. I think being geared up though, because you know what we're seeing across the board is some number of Iron Striders and then a ton of boots on the ground.
I haven't played against it yet. Honestly, like, we're just opening up here, so yep. I haven't really got any games in.
Exciting, though.
Yeah, but I think that goes to it, Tanya. You know, what I think we've mentioned before, and Adam, you were talking about it a little bit, really with us opening up, like AdMech, their new model line dropped, you know, a year ago, right before COVID hit. And I still think AdMech continued, kind of like Sisters to a certain extent, continue to catch people off guard. It's just not something that's been out there very much. So it's interesting to say the least.
Yeah, I'm a weird gamer in some respects. Like, you can't tell me fire's hot. Like, no one could tell me how bad Drakari were gonna spank me. I had to go and get, you know, destroyed by them consistently before I was like, ah, okay, you were right. And so it's generally the way I go with it. But you know, don't do what Adam do. You know, listen to me.
That's right. Adam is. Yeah, that's not even you as a gamer. That's most humans. It's okay.
Look, we're going to put the time in. We're going to take those lumps so maybe we can pass on some knowledge and some information to folks out there.
There's some clever individuals out there who don't need to, like, burn themselves. But what if I touch the fire from behind? Is it still going to hurt me? What if I come at it from a diagonal angle?
We've been talking. You know, I look at this as a challenge. So every time that there is something new in there that is going to be, it's going to be not, you know, if you're not taking it, you're going to fight it going up the ladder, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I look at it as a challenge, and, you know, and then it makes me think of all the stuff that we've talked about. Like, what about Hellblasters and Death Watch? You know, that's something that consistently comes up as something that is right on the cusp of being, I think, awesome.
And absolutely, I agree. I think Death Watch is actually a faction on the rise a lot at the moment. And for a bunch of reasons, like we've already stated, even Paul, you said this, like they were one of those factions that needed more different factions to be strong in order to really be activated. But one of those occurred. Drakari, you know, occurred. There was a thing that activated them, took them to a new level because a bunch of their strats and things went up in value. And of course, they've got their ability to have jank redeployment to the same ability that, you know, Lucius AdMech gives you jank redeployment. I think it's the biggest Beacon Angelus lets you do that redeploy. And then they have that, it's a Storm Shield upgrade that gives a bubble of 5+ invuln. That's not a psychic power or a litany. You know, you can't turn it off. Can't stop it unless you're Nullzen or Death Hex. It's just going to exist. And those are those kinds of things. I don't want to speak out of turn and say that that's something that can be a real activator for something like a Repulsor. Sorry, no, a Gladiator Reaper, but I can't quite remember if that was core locked or not for that, invuln. Yeah, so there's actually a couple of really good ones. And I already mentioned the Beacon Angelus, but there's also this Dominus Aegis relic they've got. That's the, add one to armor saving throws made for the bearer. And then they get this aura. While a friendly Deathwatch core or character unit is within 6 of the bearer, they have a 5+ invuln save. That's a really good activator for what I was talking about, those redemptive dreads that now, if you want, you don't have to auto take with the plasma cannons. You can take with those onslaughts that really get good mileage. And so, yeah, I think Deathwatch is in a cheeky good place. I'm not sure if I think they're obviously one of the better armies to go into Drakari with already, if you're a dedicated Marine player. And I think they're also going to be a decent one to go into AdMech with as well.
Are Outriders core?
Outriders are core.
Yeah, I think that's they have the right profile to really do well against AdMech because they have a high number of wounds. If you can make them a little bit defensive, I'm talking about specifically from Deathwatch, you know, you can get 5 of them and they can screen out some area of the board just by the nature of their bases. If you weren't playing with them before, maybe time to break them out again.
And I'll tell you right now, Outriders as Deathwatch is one of the key things they can do. They take, I think it's an Indominus kill team, and you take 5 Intercessors, 5 Outriders, combat squad them into 5 Intercessors and 5 Outriders. And those 5 Outriders are OBSEC now because they're troops. And so you have 5 of them together that get a 1 CP transhuman. So even if the chickens look at you, and then you could take a Chapter Master on a bike and follow them around with that relic. You know, keep them company, keeping them safe, getting them rerolls.
Chaplain,
who cares? You know, whatever you want. Whatever character you can chuck on a bike or a jump pack. And yeah, you get a lot of mileage there. I think it's some really cool stuff they can do.
I just think there's options out there. I think the AdMech are going to be disruptive because they have layers upon layers of just, I see you stacked up your defense. Well, let me stack up my offense for a second.
Yeah, the sky's the limit for some of these units.
And then it also goes the other way. It's like if your army, you know, your opponent's army is one dimensional, you kind of know when to layer out your defensive things. So you've got to find a way to build the odds in your favor. And that's going to be not falling kind of prey to some of their more trickier stratagems, such as things like firing when you were coming from reserves and that kind of stuff. And then finding out how to put the pressure on them and get rid of their big squads. And that's actually, I don't know if we covered it. Are you seeing something different? I think the optimal build right now is several, or at least a couple of large squads that you plan on putting out lots of pain from the table, from the midfield.
Yeah, and it really depends what you want them for. Like, I think Rangers are the better early game, Vanguard are the better late game. And I personally like either one squad of 20 and then absolute MSU, like a bunch of five-man Rust Orgers, Infiltrators, Taraxi, all those things, Raiders and Hounds all over the place, or 80, four blocks, five blocks, six blocks, and just go down that route. I don't quite know how I like my chickens yet, how I like the I shouldn't call them chickens. I should call them their actual name.
The Iron Striders, yeah.
I Strider Bellastari, and I don't know if I like 2 3-mans or 1 5 and a couple of twos or a couple of threes.
I ran 2 3-mans this past weekend, and they worked out really well. And I've been running 5 in one unit.
Yeah, because as soon as you run the 5, though, you give people max bang for their buck for their, you know, 6 eradicators or whatever. Anything other than the 5-man, and you're just like, oh, yeah. You can use your one really good multi-melter unit to kill my 3 Dragoons, and I'll still have 3 left, and, you know, we'll be fine.
3 that can be on opposite ends of the board, you know, so they got to kind of split
exactly
their multi. Exactly. That's what you got to look out for. And I'm not saying this in the context of, oh, they're amazing. They are good, but this is how to defeat them. You have to be able to put pressure on where they're going to be. And I personally think, maybe because this is what I'm running, but, you know, 2 20-man blocks, and then a couple of the Rangers, sorry, the Vanguard in transports, which the transports put out a solid amount of fire. They get a decent amount of rules, and they're big. You can, if the terrain is not hospitable to you, you can kind of set up some lanes of fire or lanes of traffic, essentially, with this literal boat profile that they have.
It's interesting you were talking about transports there and that being good, because this is something you've had a little bit of a frustration with, haven't you, Tanya? You've been a little bit frustrated. You love mechanized warfare. I think even Red loves the mechanized style of play as well. It's one of my favorites also. But so what do you find frustrating about that at the moment?
I mean, for me, recently with the games that I've played, it's just like how much Melta is out there. Like, it's just everywhere. It's cheap. Everybody's taking it. And it's just like deletes these expensive, because guard tanks in general are like pretty expensive for what they do, with the exception of the artillery that I think is probably priced fairly well. So it's just really frustrating to see these really cheap units come in and just like obliterate all of your tanks. But
you're right, like 150 points of attack bikes kills just about any tank that guard can put on the table. Yeah, barring
a 300 point something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 200 plus point tank commander. Or I remember, I'm just thinking about how crazy 7th edition was when you had this. You bought 3 Lehman Russes in a squadron. Well, guess what? They're a squadron. They have to stick together. They can't move outside coherency.
Hey, you had 4-inch coherency.
And then if somebody, it's 4. Oh, yeah, watch out. And you could only shoot in the arcs you could see, which was, that was a lot of fun lining those up. You felt like a maestro when you got all your firing lanes just sitting perfect. But then if someone came in with melters and they shot one tank, and all those shots that killed that tank, the rest of them would roll over onto the next tank. And then the first result they rolled was a 6 and your tank exploded. Well, guess what? All the rest of them are just on the next one now. But I get what you mean. There seems to be this real big divide in anti-tank weapons now. You think of something like a railgun on a hammerhead, yeah? Which is like, in the fluff, it's the premium, ultra, best, most high-tech, single-shot, one-shot, one-kill tank weapon. And it's like, got one shot, and that can do D6 damage. And so it's actually impossible for it to kill a tank.
It's not fair. It's an older profile in those things.
It is.
I will say that one of the strengths of every codex we've seen in the last run here is that there, you can have a mix of things on the table. Like, there isn't. So, I mean, the list that I've just described that I'm playing, and this, you know, I happen to like to take a lot of Sanguinary Guard on the Blood Angel side of things. So I didn't mind that, but it was still, you had some gold armor and some red armor, and maybe there wasn't everything represented from what you saw in the decks. But I'm seeing a case for these new decks as to where everything can be represented. You know, even, I know we've got kind of our favorites, and I've talked about Death Guard a lot, but we've talked about an all vehicle side of Death Guard. We've talked about the Terminus Est, like the zombie horde type stuff, recirculating troop types, and even in this, the Admech and Drukhari, you've got, and sisters too, there's a real, almost like potpourri of things on the table, functional on the table.
I think everyone needs to pull out their FTN bingo cards And if you had Potpourri listed, you're a winner today.
Potpourri is in the top right hand corner. Sanguinous, I'll get you the other corner.
Every episode, everyone gets anyone who had Sanguinous on it is already, they ticked that off like every week for the last 6 months.
So I think it's a sign of good things to come. And this, the disruption that we've talked about that AdMech may be presenting is just a function of as we adjust and where we're going to go through this period, I think, with everything that is released. And that's really the way it's always been. They're going to present challenges and we're going to figure out a way to get on top of them.
I think that's a big thing. Like the way that it's always been, it's just a matter that our frequency and the kind of the tempo, the rate at which this material has been released has really just picked up at this point, and that we're really seeing again what ninth edition is at this point. It's not just the rule material, but also the frequency at which this material is being released.
I'm digging it though. I want to keep it coming and I want to keep trying to stay. I don't know if I, you know, like chasing the bleeding edge of the meta is something that we necessarily have to do, because what I'm seeing in some of these books is that there are answers for things. And I think it's if we're willing to change up maybe what our preferred list builder, what we've been working towards, kind of in the middle of the stream for some of this stuff.
I genuinely think there's some growing resilience in the player base towards these things. We've had four years of essentially a rolling oppressor at the top of the, you know, competitive hierarchy or whatever for essentially the last 3 or 4 years. There's always been something at the top that everyone's like, ooh, ah, nasty. But much more than I saw in 7th edition, people in 8th and 9th edition, and of course there is always the hyperbole, yes, the internet exists, but when I talk to people, when I actually just interact one-on-one or in small groups of people, a lot of people are really skewing their thinking towards, well, this is what I can do rather than all the things they can't do. And I actually really like hearing those things. I like hearing the resilience of people looking at the positives of how they can change their game to make it more enjoyable and to close the gap rather than just being like, oh, woe is me. In 8th edition, we're seeing it a lot more, which I think is very encouraging.
Yeah, that's it. Keep it coming. And when I hear the interaction from folks, just go ahead and take a break and then we'll come back. We'll talk about some of the new stuff you got coming up for pre-order pretty soon. We'll see you in a minute.
See ya.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. This time it's just me and Adam. Adam, how are you doing?
Good. It's the late night sesh for me. And it's the early morning sesh for you?
It is. We flipped it.
Yeah, we did. But like, we couldn't sit idle while such good content drops on us, could we?
Yeah, so this we've got in hand right now the Warzone Act 2... The Book of Fire for Charadon. I kind of wanted to talk about the AdMech. I didn't want it to go any longer, another week, because I think this is something that people maybe have some concerns about. Like the AdMech, we know we're very strong right now, but you know, is it a case of like the rich getting richer?
Yeah, a lot of people concerned with AdMech being so strong already, and then thinking this was just going to be the. Well, sorry, a lot of people thought Drakari was strong, but then when the book of the Cult of Strife supplement came out and they got all the Witch Coven stuff got supercharged, people are already of the opinion that AdMech is almost where Drakari were when they got supercharged, and worried that this was going to supercharge them and take them to a level, you know, of oppressiveness here for unforeseen. Well, I'm probably going to go out on a limb and say it's not, just from what I've seen.
Well,
but you'll know better than I will, mate.
Well, no, I mean, for this right here, I think we're talking about the Skitarii veteran cohort. And I think this is actually pretty well balanced in the fact that it has some restrictions and then some benefits and then a point increase for the base level.
Yeah. Yeah. So the buy-in is literally just paying more points for your stuff. And correct me if I'm wrong, what are the T's and C's here? Do you have to upgrade every single one of these models that you take?
You do. So the Skitarii Veteran Cohort is an army of renown restrictions. Mm. All units in your army must be Skitarii units, with the following exceptions. Your army can include one Tech Priest Dominus model. Your army can include one Tech Priest Manipulus model. Your army can include one Tech Priest Engine Seer. Your army can include one Techno-Archaeologist. You know, note that this means your army can include one of each of these specified models.
Yeah, so that's actually quite restrictive to the way a lot of people want to play at the moment. You yourself, my man, are somebody who likes to take two manipulators, and this is saying you can only ever have one.
Only get one, and I do. I think that's actually the strongest, you know, right now. But again, we'll get to there's more. So all units in your army must be drawn from the same forge world. Mm-hmm. Each detachment in your army must include at least one Skitarii marshal. That's not really a detriment, though. Your army, or sorry, your warlord must be a Skitarii Marshal model. Yep. Then the benefits, all Skitarii units in your army gain the Skitarii Veteran Cohort keyword. You have access to the Skitarii Veteran Cohort, Warlord Trait, Relics, and Stratagems. All of the Skitarii Ranger units in your army must be upgraded to Skitarii Ranger Veterans units, and all the Skitarii Vanguard units in your army must be upgraded to Skitarii Vanguard Veteran units. Now, we'll talk about what that means in just a second, but I just want to let you know right off the bat that the veteran upgrades cost 2 points per model.
So putting up to, is that 10 points per model at that point? I think they're 8 at the moment, yeah?
Yes. But I think it's a 15-something% increase, yeah, or something?
It's not tiny, is it?
Well, not
in this game, it is.
Not when you're thinking about what the base cost is, and then when you're looking at factoring in a squad of 20 or something, you know, the 60 or 80 or, 100 ones that we've been talking about running.
Yeah. And so this is akin to, you know, the Trueborn, the Blood Brides kind of upgrades that Drakkari got. Yeah. And it's pretty much similar. Is the Vanguard upgrade the same as the 2 points per model?
It is. Yeah. It's for both of the squad. Yeah.
So 2 points per model. I hope I'm getting something good. What is it?
For the Ranger veterans, gain the veteran keyword in the following abilities. Veteran Skitarii, add 1 to the leadership and attack characteristics of models in this unit.
Yeah.
Look, it's okay. They're not known for their punching power, but that's cute. Anything else?
Well, you know, it's so with that, if you've got one attack, you're never going to do all that great in assault. You do, maybe do okay. Maybe get lucky. You know, yep. Maybe you take out one intercessor or whatever that charged in.
Yeah.
2 attacks per, when you start looking at the whole, you know, a big fat unit, again, well, you're paying for it, but...
Well, all of a sudden, then you start looking at, like, Riser, and where you get the +1 to wound, and all, you just get an exponential value from all these things now. So, yeah, that's actually pretty good.
So, enhanced bionics, models in this unit have a 5+ invulnerable save.
Okay.
Yeah, so that can be pretty tasty.
Are there any steak knives on this, or is that it?
Here we go. And then the last thing, stealth optimization. Each time a ranged attack is made against this unit, the unit receives the benefit of light cover, as described in the Warhammer 40,000 core book. If this unit makes a normal move, advances, or falls back during the movement phase, it loses this ability until the start.
Okay, thank God. Thank God. Thank God there's some terms and conditions there. Wow. So 2 points per model for essentially +1 to reinvuln save, +1 to leadership, +1 attack, and then +1 save when you don't move. Does that count their pre-game scout move? Because they move 3 inches at the start of the game. Yeah. Does that mean they don't have it turn one, or do they still get it?
During your movement phase. So anything that doesn't happen in the movement phase.
That's cool. So if you can position them where they want to be turn one, you can just hunker down like in the open. So it's not hunkering down, is it? You're just like, hey, come shoot me. And it doesn't matter because we got what? They'll have a 3+ armor and a 5+ invuln, 20 models. Yeah, it's a good 2 points. I think that's a good 2 points of value. What do you think?
Yeah, I like it. I think this gives it some flavor. It allows you to, I guess, invest in the models that you already have, especially if you're a few hundred points away from 2,000, trying to get ready for that tournament.
Yep. Actually, dead set. You're absolutely right.
You're like, well, you know what? I just won't paint these other 20 because I can just make them veterans this time.
I'm 15% off 2,000 points. Oh, what cost it 15% to upgrade? Here we go. That's pretty good.
Vanguard veterans. You want to jump to them or do you have...
Dude, so wait. So you just said 2 words there. Vanguard veterans. That's a Space Marine model.
They're getting there.
It's just funny that they choose to do that.
So the veteran Skitarii add 1 to their leadership and attack characteristics of the model. Yep. Enhanced bionics 5+. And then the skirmish optimization is that each time an advanced roll is made with this unit, roll 1 additional d6 and discard 1 of the dice. Time this unit is targeted with a weapon with the blast rule, this unit never counts as containing 6 or more models when determining how many attacks are made with that weapon.
Holy crap. Holy crap. Forgive me if I'm wrong, that's the first time I've ever seen that as a thing, yeah?
I think so.
Nothing else in the game has that as a thing?
I think that is unique.
Wow. That is very potent, very powerful. Like, I'm just going to go on a limb say right now, that makes one of the best solutions for these Skitarians being what I think is like the Plasma Inceptors, not a thing. That takes away all their ability to just wipe out a 20-man unit. And then you couple that with the 5+ invulnerable save in addition that, you know, a third of the damage you're putting through is just getting, you know, stopped at the door. dude, I think that's the better of the two when you put them next to each other. But man, they're both really good. I just think that you're never going to cop the blast. The 20-man block, never going to cost a full blast. Really potent. And like I said, very unique as well. Yeah. Nothing else has that.
These things are very well suited to the units. You know, with the Rangers, you can get in position and you're firing your rifles from a long way downtown. Mm-hmm. And the Vanguard veterans, you're going to put them closer, you know, for their assault three and stuff, and maybe getting off eventually when they get into hand-to-hand, because you're going to be close by. You'll get to use their negative toughness and strength aura.
Yeah, well, exactly right. You actually want to get them up close and personal, and you've got all the incentives to do it, and you're enabled to do it, especially with that extra reroll for the move. Do they have assault weapons? Why do I think that they've got assault weapons as well?
The rifle is assault, but it's like assault three, I believe it is.
Yeah, it's like an 18-inch range. I can tell you. I'm going to race you, mate. We're going to keep this in. I'm going to race you. Radium Carbine, Assault 3, Strength 3. Yeah, so, wow, they just get so enabled by this. They look really appealing right now. 10 points a model. So, what? The optimum unit, of course, is what you're talking about, the 20-man. 200 points is no, you know, drop in the ocean, you know, for this army. It's not like you don't have a huge array of other units you want to take all the time. But having two of these for 400 points, I'd do it. Like, I'd be really, really questioning whether I should or shouldn't. What are the other restrictions? What are the other restrictions on the cohort? You can't take any ad mech units, yeah?
It has to be all Skitarii except for those things that we mentioned. And then the Marshal has to be the Warlord.
Which might be it depends what people's collections are like. A lot of people have a lot of Cataphrons, a lot of other bits and pieces. Castellan Robots example as well. Where we'll get through the whole thing. I don't want to ask you if you're willing to drop the Castellan Robots to take this stuff, but tell us about the rest of the.
Yes. So then there's some nice stratagems here. So Binaric Offense, this is a 3 command point stratagem. So anytime you see that 3, you better be thinking,
be good.
Is this worth it?
Yeah.
Use this stratagem in the shooting phase, select one enemy unit and 2 Skitarii veteran cohort core units from your army. Until the end of the phase, models in those 2 Skitarii units can only target the enemy unit, and only if an enemy unit is eligible to target as a target for those attacks. Each time a model in one of those 2 Skitarii units makes a ranged attack, add 1 to that attack's wound roll.
Wow, okay. Yeah, that's not bad. 3 CP's very steep, but you get it on 2 units, not 1. And so when you've got somebody's real hard nut to crack unit, and you know it's going to need more than 1 of your Skitarii units to do it, then yeah, why not? Like, 3 CP just to auto get the job done. Seems good, but yeah, there are a lot of times where you're just not going to want to throw 3 CP at something.
Well, how's this work? So you've got that huge unit of Dark Angel Terminators rolling up.
Yeah. The bad example, because the +1 to wound doesn't affect.
That's what I'm asking. Yeah. I was like, how does that interact? That was a.
Yeah, so the transhuman mechanic is like a blanket. Nothing can change this.
It's unmodified. Four pluses.
Where this would be cool is if you haven't taken Rangers in your army, you've taken a bunch of Vanguard who wound those guys on 5s. This would put them to 4s.
Yeah. And then things like Knights, you know, if you see them.
Oh, dude, Knights. This is the worst thing in the world for Knights. this is absolutely awful for Knights. Because your unit of Rangers, 2 units of your Rangers from 30-odd inches away, if they don't have any buffs to their range, can just wound it on 4s and just ice it from the other side of the table. That's rough.
And Mortarion, I think Mortarion's struggling right now just in general with some of the kind of the cumulative things that have been going on in the game right now.
Too many las cannons, too many melters, and yeah, he's having a rough go of it.
Yeah, but this stratagem. It's been my experience so far that the army does have some CP to burn. It's not necessarily too thirsty for command points.
Well, here's the thing: a lot of people I've been seeing are wanting to be taking a single battalion because they feel like they've got just so much to do with their CP every game, and so many different buffs and layers of stuff they want to do.
Oh, you want to use them? I just think sometimes the base layer of the data sheet slate just does what you need it to do sometimes.
Exactly. Like I see a lot of people stacking all their buffs on their chicken walkers, their Ballistari. Yep. I'm like, you don't need those buffs to kill this rhino, brother. Calm down. Like, you know, chuck it on these guys. They
just
can actually
the
use
dice,
it.
Man.
just roll the dice. Probably going to do it.
You got a lot of shots. It's D3 +3. He's only got 11 wounds.
That's right. But yeah, no, I think this is really potent. I like where this is going. It's not over the top, you know? if this was 2 CP, or, you know, God forbid 1 CP for maybe one unit, it would be probably too strong. 3 CP for two units, don't mind that balance. I think that's sitting about right for what you get.
Yeah, were it to be 1 CP for one unit, I think you would just do it every single time and not even think about it.
Bread and butter. Bread and butter, yeah. As it is right now, it's a little... If your opponent has the right unit and you can get two of your units in the right spot at the right time, you probably go for it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think it's another one here is the Bionic Endurance. Use this stratagem in any phase when a model in a Skitarii veteran cohort core unit from your army would lose a wound until the end of the phase. Each time the model in that unit would lose a wound, roll a d6 on a 5+. That wound is not lost.
Oh.
If that unit has a power rating of 10 or more, the stratagem costs 3 CP. Otherwise, it costs 2 CP.
Okay. Okay.
It's a pricey one.
A bit to unpack here. I'm scrolling down in the admin codex right now because I want to see what the power level of 10 infiltrators is, because I feel like that is where you are going to want this. Power rating 8 for 6 or more models. Okay, that's where it is. If this unit contains 6 or more models, it has a power rating of 8. So 10 Skitarii infiltrators with their already enhanced bionics will have a 5+, 5+, and you can be not have any rerolls against them. That makes them very, very hard to shift. I like that combo a lot. What do you think about this? You feel like this is right on the money? I feel like you're paying the right amount of CP for something this powerful. But I feel like it is very powerful.
It is powerful because what this does when you start stacking up the, you know, I got light cover, or, you know, I've got this, I've got that, and hey, you spent your entire shooting phase and you killed 25% less models than you were expecting to or normally do. That means if I don't have first turn, I haven't been moved that much. My offensive power has not been diminished very much at all, or at least significantly less. And so I now have even, you know, more guns than you thought I was going to have to bring to bear on you in my turn.
Yeah, agreed. I'm having a quick scroll down of all the Skitarii units, and I can't see a single one that has 10, even at max size, has 10
power level.
Yeah, they're all 8 or 9 at max. Ah, it's for Ballistari.
Well, and also the Skitarii Rangers, you add 1 power per 10 models. The 2-point upgrade is also adds power level.
Oh, it does it. Okay, that makes a lot more interesting. It makes a lot more sense. So I'm looking at it and thinking, why would they do that? So a veteran cohort core unit. So obviously the one I just jumped to then was the Ballistari. Increases the unit's powering by 4 for every additional Ballistari. And so yeah, as soon as you get past 3 Ballistari, you're seeing a 12 power level. And yeah, you would have to pay the max points for that. The same for the Sardunian Dragoons. And yeah, that makes all the sense in the world, because those things would be so horrific with a 5+ feel no pain as well. But you're right. So you're saying 20 Rangers, 20 Skitarii will be the 3 CP?
Yeah, so because it goes to power rating 8 if you were to max out the squad, but that's plus 2 power level because of the 20 models. And so
then, well done, G-Dub. You thought about the worst scenarios for this, and you've thought about it. But you gave us options for the good ones. This is empowering people to take those larger squads of infiltrators and Rustalkers and stuff. And I think I want to see those on the table, the Sterilize, the Sulfur Hounds, all that stuff, giving them a nice little increase in durability. I think it's cool.
Yes. I mean, this is not everything in here, but I wanted to at least talk about that since we were kind of talking about how to beat them in the first part of the show.
Yeah.
I mean, I like these. I do not think that they are over the top, as it were. I think it's themey. You can build something around it. And to answer your question of if I would drop my Castellans for something like this, and that's a great question. And I don't have an answer for you. I think maybe sometimes. And that's cool because it gives me some options to play with.
Yeah. I do think you're probably right. So far from what I've read from this, if you were playing an army where you felt like, and you'd get to an end of a game and you'd fly, you've got like 6 or 7 CP left, like inexplicably got a bunch of CP left, you're like, I guess I just take this army instead, and now I've got a bunch of extra big CP dumps that give me huge returns for investment. Because that's what those so far, that we've got two or three CP strats, really, really intensive. Especially seeing a 3 CP strat straight off the bat, you're always like, you get a bit of a shock. You're like, oh, this better melt my brain. This better be a Vect. This better be something really, you know, game changing. And it is. You know, two possible units of 20 guys getting +1 to wound. Not, you know, it's only in the shooting phase, so you can't chuck this on, you know, Rustalkers and stuff and go and kill, you know, Magnus in combat or whatnot. But, you know, it's a good 3 CP strat if you can wield it appropriately. This actually is really cool for giving things like autocannon chickens a lease on life as well, I think. Because when you give them +1 to wound, all of a sudden that's strength 7. It doesn't matter at all. And they can be there hunting those things like those raiders, like those Kronos and things of that ilk, just as well as the Laz cannons, and then, you know, buffing them up to get them to that next break point when they need to go up to stuff against, like, you know, the Mortarians out there, the Knights.
And we did see Kronos creep in maybe as a response to some of the stuff that we've seen.
Exactly right.
When we were doing our commentary on the Thursday show.
Yeah, a lot of people are leaning into those now because of the nerf. They're still, you know, I guess the best return from Dark Technomancers, being able to buff all their shooting and their range, and they've still got a flamer that can get buffed by it. So yeah, they're really, really well positioned at the moment. So having things that are good into them are really, really good. Are there any more strats, or was it just the two?
Because there is another one, but we'll save that. I want to jump to Bellicor if I can with the time that we have.
I'm never going
to
stop you talking about Bellicor.
So there's stratagems, there's relics, there's, you know, there's warlord trait, there's the full run for this army of renown. And there's actually tons in this book. We got some sister stuff. You know, there's chaos stuff, not just Bellicor. So this is I think it'd be a good book. It's maybe a must have if you play these factions or playing along with the campaign. And also there is a Crusade book that came out for an extra play on that side. So I think maybe we'll wait till we have Red back to talk about that.
Totally fair.
I mentioned the Thursday show. You and I and Alan Pajama Pants on the Frontline Gaming Network do a show on Thursdays where we run down the list that you can see in the big tournaments coming up.
Yeah, it's a bit of a hype show. We lay a lot of smack on each other, talk about what's winning, what's losing, who are the big note players, what are they taking, and why. We do a lot of list analysis. It's a really good show. Jump on and support it if you're so inclined.
Well, we do it live, and it comes out later also, but you can chat, and we do some, you know, we interact with the chat. It's fun, but we do talk about mostly tournaments and the personalities you'll see at those things and the list that will be present. And then we call shots to see, hey, who's going to win this thing?
Yeah, we give our shoe-ins and our picks for who we think is going to go the distance. And yeah, of course, you know, there's only ever one winner, and we're talking about 100-player events at times. So yeah, eggs usually on our face is like the matter of course.
But that's on the Frontline Gaming Network. Check us out over there if you are so inclined. Thank you very much. And
nice
so,
plug. Love it.
Bellicor. Bellicor has had some rules for Sigmar for a while. Now we're going to see some 40K rules for Bellicor, and I'm going to say, he's a beast.
We've had some little bits and pieces dropped in here, like his immortal vigor was dropped, you know, the minus one to wound from shooting and stuff like that. And, you know, where's the meme you got? You got my attention? You got to be like, start backing up. Because, this guy looks like a freak. He looks terrifying, man. But tell us a story.
16 wounds with giant model, so can't be hidden, you know, really, that well. Each time an attack is made with this weapon, the Blade of Shadows, it's got two profiles there. The first sweeping strike is strength of the user, which is 8, pretty good. -3 AP, 1 damage each time an attack is made with this weapon. Make 2 hits instead of 1, so it turns his 6 attacks into 12 attacks, 6 base attacks before he starts bracketing into 12 attacks. So he's a unit killer. Yes. And then has the piercing strike, which is +4 strength, -4 AP, D3 +3. And then each time an attack is made with his weapon profile, invulnerable saving throws cannot be made against that attack. So not just a unit killer, he's a big boy killer.
He's an everything killer. A lot of people want to know how many points he is, but if you want to save that to last, by all means, keep saying.
I'd say 360 points.
Yeah, look, that's about right. thank praise be, he's not under 300 points. Like, praise be, like, to the Emperor. 360, that seems okay. Yeah, he's up there with Primarch. He's up there in Primarch points. That's fair.
And I think he's got the stats to back it up. So the Immortal Vigor model has a 4+ invulnerable save. Each time a ranged attack is made against the model, subtract 1 from that attack's wound roll. So he's toughness 7. So still in the, you know, kind of like danger range for things like last cannons, but this helps a bit.
Yep, absolutely. The minus 1 to wound is
not against last cannons. It helps against some other things.
Well, so it still halves las cannons. It takes las cannons from the 3 to the 4, and then he stops another half of those with his invulnerable save. So you can shoot, you know, 6 las cannons at the guy, and he's -1 to hit. So you could hit him on 4s, wound him on 4s, and 4s to stop him on the invuln. And so you hit him, you're shooting with 6, and 1 goes through. I think you're happy to cop that.
Well, I like on the other side of it is where a lot of things would be needing 5s. You're now needing 6s for him. So 6s,
that's where it gets rough. That's where it gets really rough. So anything strength 6 and below. Yeah. You just don't look at him.
Yeah, so the same things that are really helping you strip those extra wounds off of things like Mortarion or Knights or whatever are just not going to have the same impact. It's going to really throw the math off when you're dealing with Bellicor.
And how much more? So he's -1 to hit from all attacks, ranged and combat, but you can't re-roll the hit roll.
So the shadow form, each time an attack is made against this model, your opponent cannot reroll the hit roll. Each time an attack is made against this unit, subtract one from that attack's hit roll.
You just got to cop it on the chin. There's nothing, yeah. I mean, you're not minus one to wound in melee, but you're still minus one to hit in both. So yeah, you just minus one to hit the dude. Nothing you can do about it. And you can't reroll him. You can't change him. The best you can do is get plus one or possibly plus two to hit if you can find it somewhere. But apart from that, like, those are the only ways you're going to get around what this guy's packing defensively.
So we've seen ways that the Games Workshop is putting in protection for some of these larger models, like with Gaz only being able to lose X amount of wounds per phase or something like that. And I like that way to come about that. And this, you know, Bellicor is, you know, what is he, the Prince of Shadows, Lord of Shadows, or whatever, always known as being like the tricksy and, I guess, sly one.
Yeah. He's you know, he's Shadows and Deceit, man. He's you know, just smoking shadows. And he's the first. He's had to watch the Empires come, the Empires go, and now what, he's been supplanted by Abaddon? He's pissed off. And he's here to tell you about it.
He's first chosen, and that's the thing, first Demon Prince. And so in his Army of Renown, we're going to learn that he does not play well with others.
With others. Tell us why.
Well, if this model is your warlord, you must have the Shadow Lord warlord trait, and we'll talk about that in a minute. You can't run him with the greater demons in his Army of Renown. Your army cannot include Bloodthirsters, Lord of Change, Great Unclean Ones, Keeper of Secrets, Demon Engine. World Eaters, Thousand Sons, Death Guard, Emperor's Children, Chaos Knights, Titanicus Traitors, Corn Berserkers, Rubric Marines, Plague Marines, or Noise Marine units. So nobody
who's dedicated.
Yeah.
Or it's almost like he's not playing well with anything that wasn't there at the conception of Chaos. He'll only play with like OG Chaos models.
Yeah, or those that are unaligned.
Unaligned, yeah. That's pretty cool. I like that. I like that aspect to him.
Yeah, it's neat. So, Lord of Torment, while an enemy unit is within 6 inches of this model, subtract one from the leadership characteristic of that model's in that unit. And each time a combat attrition test is taken for that unit, subtract one from the combat attrition test. So, that's double whammy.
Yeah.
And that comes up. You know, we have a meaningful morale phase now.
Yeah, well, anytime you can make like anything of value run away. Actually, anytime you can make anything run away, it's just adding value to the back end of your own play. Then it's cool he's got that. It makes sense with what he is as a character.
It helps you get those. It's in that specifically in that thing, you get something down to a couple of a couple of models left in the unit. And you're like, man, what? Of course they have the CP, but most CP to auto pass is once per game. And so later in the game, when you're running out of resources to get people's models completely all the way off the table, this could help. I mean, if you're that close to Bellicor, you're probably in, you know, a different, like, you got a lot more problems.
That's a good way of saying it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Usually these guys come with multiple auras. Usually they have one that debuffs and then one that buffs. I'm assuming he has like a captain's aura or something for demons.
Yeah, while a friendly demon or disciples of Bellicor unit, excluding vehicle units, is within 6 inches of the model, each time the model in that unit makes an attack, reroll a hit roll of one.
Fair. I expected him to have that. Like I said, I even guessed that he had that. But cool. I like that it's got it goes across, essentially across codexes even, because you can have Chaos Space Marine models and Demon models in this same thing, and he can give them all reroll once to hit. So you don't have to, there's no crossing of the streams, there's no doubling down or on the same bus. He's just going to give it to everybody.
Yeah, so it didn't say anything about specific factions or detachments or whatever. Then Spiteful Jealousy, if your army is battle-forged, you cannot include this model in a detachment that includes any other Demon Prince models. Each time this model makes an attack that targets a Demon Prince model, you can reroll the hit roll and you can reroll the wound roll.
That's the best. So he's anti-demon demons. Well, so anti-demon hierarchy. That's cool. I love they put that in there. That's freaking awesome.
I read that as Spiteful Jersey the first time.
Spiteful Jersey. He's got number... Never mind.
He's double zero coming for you.
Yeah. That's good as.
But I think that is a nice bit of Demon Princes are popular to include in lots of different builds, you know, for especially Chaos, if you're playing people playing Chaos out there. And I like this. He can almost like just kill them basically for free. I mean, if he's
instantly, man. He ignores invulns. He's what, neg freaking four on his swipes with D3 plus three damage. Rerolling the wounds. Iced.
Yeah, six pick attacks. So let's say you jump in with three Demon Princes. He kills them all.
Technically, yeah. Two for you. All dead. Hitting on twos, winning on twos or threes. Dead. Phenomenal.
I like it. So going over to the Disciples of Bellicor is an army of renown. And we mentioned what you couldn't take. You also can't include more Chaos Cultist units than Heretic Astartes units. We're starting to see that kind of be...
Yeah, pop up more and more.
Yep. You cannot include a second demon unit in your army that owes its allegiance to the same Chaos God unless your army also includes at least one demon unit that owes its allegiance to each of the other three Chaos Gods.
So you have to spread out your influence. You have to take one of each God before you can take a second of each God?
Yeah, and third of each God. That goes on to say, to further triple down on that.
That makes it, that might be a bit of a stopper for people.
Oh, yeah, you definitely, this is themed thing, I think.
Yeah, and you need to really plan this out. You can't just cherry pick and just go chuck it all together. But where this is cool is that a lot of demon enthusiasts have all the stuff.
Yeah.
They've got like five of everything, you know? So there's no reason that they can't try and make this work.
Bellicor is a showcase model. And so I could see people wanting to really lean into it with some of these, especially if they're longtime demon players and have all these models. It's not really a drawback at all.
Yeah.
Although it is, there's a whole list of restrictions and then there's a whole list of benefits. So all units in the army, excluding unaligned and building units, gain Disciples of Bellicor keyword. All units in your army with Heretic Astartes faction keyword gain the Legion Disciples keyword. All units in your army with Chaos Demon faction keywords gain Demonic Disciples keyword. All troops in your army gain objective secured. So that's good. If a detachment contains any units with a Chaos Demon faction keyword, it can use stratagems, relics, and warlord traits as if it were Chaos Demon's detachment.
That's cool. So you just get to double down. You get to cave your cake and eat all this new stuff too.
If a detachment contains any units with a Heretic Astartes faction keyword, it can use stratagems, relics, and warlord traits as if it were Chaos Space Marines detachment.
Cool.
Note, however, that such a detachment never counts as a Legion detachment, and you cannot use any Legion-specific stratagems, relics, keywords.
That's what you're giving up. I'm saying there's got to be something you're actually losing here, otherwise you're just gaining. Like, you've got to have one of each god demon unit and stuff. Yeah, that can be frustrating. But, you know, you're just going to be gaining. So you're losing your supplement stuff. You're losing whatever you get for being world bearers, word bearers, whatever you get for being Light Lords in your Vigilus. Sorry, it wasn't Vigilus Blazes. It wasn't Vigilus Damned. Well, yes, whatever Psychic Awakening it was they came out in. Actually, they're in this, aren't they?
They're in here, yeah. I was going to say, just a few more pages. We're not going to cover them in this segment, but they are in here.
Yeah. I totally forgot they're in there. But yeah, it's cool that they're in there now.
You have access to the Disciples of Bellicor stratagems. Disciples of Bellicor psychers in your army can generate their psychic powers from the Noctic discipline.
Yep.
Demonic disciple characters. Units do not gain a demonic locus, but instead gain locus of shadow ability, as described below. And then Legion disciples. Units in your army cannot have a Legion trait, but instead gain the Disciples of Shadow ability, as described below.
What are some of these Shadow abilities? I think I've seen the Disciples of Shadow one. I think the G-Dub told us about that one. That's the something about attrition, and then your minus one to hit if you're outside, I think it's 12
that's
or 18.
It. If you're outside of 12, subtract one from the attack's hit roll.
Yep.
I like that. That actually is...
I think that's good. What you're giving up for somebody, this is arguably better.
The Locus of Shadows. Yeah. Your opponent cannot re-roll the hit roll. While a friendly Disciples unit is within 6 inches of this model, each time a ranged attack is made against the unit, you cannot reroll the hit roll. If the attacker is more than 12, subtract one from the attack's hit roll.
Oh, that's cool. I like that one better than the last one as well. Because, like, okay, so you're outside 12, minus one to hit, you're inside six, no rerolls. And so there's this little... just 6 to 12 inch band where everything's good, and then anything else, everything's stuck.
Yeah, if you want to get, I mean, you're going to want to, I think when you're playing some of these things, you're going to want to get closer.
Well, yeah, of course.
Most of the units in these factions want to get closer.
Oh, for them. I thought you said you were saying you want to get closer to them. I'm like,
oh, no, I don't want to be far away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. they're going to want to get right in your grill, absolutely.
Yeah, these units, I think, are going to be wanting to get up close.
Yeah, agreed.
So that's the teaser. I mean, that's
the taste test.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got a lot to cover. And there is a ton in this book. It's got all the stuff we described. Got a bunch of chaos stuff.
It's got the Order of Armada Lady supplement in as well. For sisters players.
Yep. Nothing in here, and I guess we can go ahead and say here that gives Chaos Space Marines the additional wound.
Ah, bam, bam. But yeah. Fair. I didn't expect him to.
I think this might have been a decent place to lock it in. Like, oh, and by the way, also, if you're using Bellicor, then he fuels your Heretic Astartes with extra Chaos Rage, and I mean, whatever.
He's made his disciples so angry, they double their durability.
Fight beyond death.
I would prefer if they just pulled the trigger and did it, because at this point, I know 9th edition isn't what G-Dub hoped it would be, and I'm probably in G-Dub's estimation of what their release schedule should have been, pretty much all the codexes would be out by now, and everybody would have their second wound, Grey Knights included, T-Suns, etc. But I just want to pull the bandaid off and just do it, because it feels like there is a big... Oh, it feels like they're holding on for no reason now. It's been almost a year. It's been over a year. Sorry, 6 months, since the Space Marine Codex, right?
Yeah. I don't know what the schedule or plan is or with any of that kind of stuff, or if they may never see it. I mean, this is just your punishment for being heretical.
Stay feeble. Yeah, exactly right.
But, you know, look, this is, I think this gives a lot of options, I don't want to say power is relative, you know, but that's, I think from the things we've seen so far, there is, at least in this book, there's trade-offs. If you want to commit to this, there's a meaningful flip side of that coin.
Yeah,
and look, I think it's Chaos, really brilliant design.
Chaos as a whole, and I'm talking to some of the best Chaos players out there, they're saying that Chaos is lacking a bit of flavor at the moment. It's lacking a bit of dynamics, lacking a bit of intrigue. Some of it's being injected thanks to the changes in the drop pods. Now the Charybdis and the Dreadclaw, you can start wielding all these different units, etc. It's given Empress Children new leafs on life, and probably the same for things like World Eaters, etc. Red's really excited about them. But this is just another flavor-adding option for that Chaos super faction. I'm just really happy to see it. These things that people may be feeling getting a little bit stale just because it's been so long between drinks for them, like rules-wise, this is cool stuff to inject in it. A bit of flavor, a bit of intrigue, and attached to just like one of the most epic freaking models you have ever seen in your life.
God, so gorgeous.
He looks so good. He really is. Absolutely. I can't wait for him to beat my face in.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a glow-up, you know, as they say out there. This is just an amazing model, and I hear that they are back in stock now for folks that are been wanting to get their hands on one.
Because I'm even tempted to just buy one of these. Even though I don't play Chaos, I would just be very happy to just have this guy on my shelf above my desk and just look up and be like, yeah, he's looking over me.
Well, I suggest that if people are even on the fence about getting them, that you get them while they're there, because these are the same things. These are going to be bought by collectors, painters. Mm-hmm. Probably people that have never played a Chaos faction in their entire life, just because the model is gorgeous.
Just putting it out there, I know some people, I've talked to people who, they see models like this come out, they've seen the Magnuses and the Mortarians, and they're intimidated to buy things like this because they're like, it's a big centerpiece model, I'm not sure I'm ever going to do it justice. I'm of the opposite opinion. I think these big centerpiece models give you so many opportunities to learn new techniques, to learn... And on the same model, like trying so many new things on the same model, you will never get a better single canvas upon which to improve than these beautiful centerpieces.
That is just an excellent point.
You've got nothing to lose.
And they really are so massive compared to what we normally do for models. And so even if I don't always do sub-assemblies.
Yep.
But with these larger models, it seems like it lends itself to it a little bit more easily, less fiddly, because you have a bigger piece of plastic in your hand, and you can really take your time on one aspect of it.
Exactly right. You want to spend a week on Bellicor's wings, 2 weeks, a month, go for it. No one's going to stop you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. Yeah, great point. Well, listen, that's basically all the time we've got today, but there's a lot to do. We're going to be focusing on this on the next episode, some of the Crusade stuff. We know Red's super into the Crusade, been playing a lot of that recently.
Absolutely. And there's a lot more to unpack here. Like, we did like, what, a third of the Skitarii rules and maybe a quarter of the Chaos rules. Like, Yeah, all from here. All going up from here.
We're going to bring finishing moves back next week. You got to help keep me honest on that, because some of the things that we've been talking about, you know, like with Tanya and even things you just mentioned about, I think we need to run down like a top five, how to start a new army, how to start a new hobby project, those kind of things. If you're looking to do that, I think that'd be a fun thing to explore.
Sure.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening.
Beautiful, man.
Like, share, subscribe, click things, leave us 5-star reviews. Those are great ways to share this show so other people might find us. And we'll see you next week.
See you then.
I don't know what they said, but I already subscribed. You better do it too.